Hey, everybody, it's Jesse Ziegler
and Quinn Cody,
and we're here with the Climb Dakar Rally Daily Show presented by Cycle News and presented by Moto Minded. I'm excited to say that our friends at Moto Minded are coming on board this year as a presenting sponsor. We got a lot more to talk about them in the future. But right now, we're kicking things off in our interview series, and these are pre-race interviews. So nobody is in Saudi Arabia at the time of these interviews, but we caught up with Skyler House, literally like the best success story of the year, got his factory ride. And we caught up with him at the Kirk Caselli Foundation, which is close to his heart, and you'll hear in the interview, but also close to my co-host heart, Quinn Cody, because he was his first real job, maybe even, was as, you know,
yeah, board nearly member. Nearly. I mean, real job after racing. Yeah.
So yeah, it's not a real job,
you know, kind of worked as an advisor and then kind of as I guess operations director for the Caselli Foundation, for a couple of years, getting everything off the ground. And, you know, it was a really rewarding experience for me, is kind of helping build up the Kirk Caselli Foundation into right. what it is. And I'm still on the board of the foundation. I don't work as much day to day with it anymore, but, you know, still help to organize the events, the ride day and the DOFA winery event and things like that.
Very, very awesome organization. If you're not familiar with it, go to kirkcaselli.com, check it out. Go to one of the events, or just donate. Awesome cause. They raffle off a bike every year. You get a sick dirt bike. They raffle off tons of cool products at their events where you can get signed memorabilia, or I got race radios from PCI Race Radios once.
Yeah. I mean, the mission of the Kirk Caselli Foundation is protecting and supporting the lives of off-road riders. And so we have a lot of different programs. One thing that we're quite proud of is a scholarship program. So I don't have the exact numbers right now, but I want to say we've given out over 50,000 in scholarships. And
very cool.
You know, we're just kind of the scholarship is designed to for riders who are kind of want to go back to school, or mm-hmm. just racers who want to just go to school in general.
Yeah. Expand their career beyond the racetrack, or enhance their career on the racetrack with further education. Seems like a very cool program. Skyler raced with Kirk Caselli in the National Hare and Hound Series, Desert Racing Series. He was an up-and-coming, you know, 250A rider, started racing some pro classes, started battling with Kurt a few times. He's got some great stories you guys are going to love soon. You raced with Kurt plenty of times in your career as well. Give me a little Kirk Caselli wisdom from the Quinn Cody archives.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt, you know, I watched Kurt grow up. I was a couple years older than him, and, you know, we raced against each other. We raced together as teammates, and you know, a lot of good times, a lot of fun times with Kurt. He's, you know, he's a really special guy, and yeah. he knew how to have fun but really took the sport seriously and kind of took it to a professional level. You know, to the point where, like, especially us off-road guys, we were more of like a working man kind of thing. You know, we were like, okay, yeah, you would go to work during the week and then race on the weekends. And yep. Kurt really kind of took it to another level where it was a lot more professional and really pushed us to kind of take it to the next level.
He had a really good mind for racing. Like his mindset when it came to racing was really precise and organized and really full of, you know, he was tactful. And
for sure.
But at the same time, he knew that you had to have fun the entire time you're doing it.
For sure.
And like, he was such a smart ass, and he was so funny all the time to everybody.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, you think back to some of the things and just laughing so hard that yep. you're crying. And,
yeah.
You know,
he's a funny dude.
Some of the funnest times ever, for sure. And racing motorcycles and hanging out with Kurt.
And then he was on his way to rally racing stardom on the factory rally team. You know, had great success right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, Kurt, you know, he went out on kind of at short notice
yeah.
to the KTM factory team, and he went out that first year and won a stage, and you know, had a few unfortunate incidents in the first rally, but really yeah. kind of showed everyone what he was capable of. And at that point, there was no one really of his caliber as far as speed.
Yeah.
Racing rally, it was still kind of Mark Coma and Cyril Dupree, and they were going back and forth. But Kurt came in with a whole nother level of speed and really kind of woke those guys up and scared them a little bit.
Yeah. And really could have cracked the code on that racing and just been as successful at that as he was, you know, everything else in his life. So the Caselli Foundation celebrates him and his life and his legacy and his family and friends. And I think Skyler is a great product of Kirk Caselli's mentorship and, you know, just inspiration, as you'll hear in the interview. What's your experience with Skyler? Because little reference, Quinn couldn't be in the interview at the Caselli Ride Day because he was working at the Caselli Ride Day as a member of the board And plus he's organizing the event, like top to bottom, pretty skeleton crew out there this year because of travel and stuff like that. So I grabbed Skyler, took him up in the big rig, set up the podcast gear and talked to him. So Quinn couldn't be there, so I couldn't quiz him in person, but like, what's your experience with Skyler other than the show? What's your Skyler Quinn analysis right now?
So I remember Skyler as kind of a 250A rider, and he was always riding a two-stroke.
Did he have borrowed gear and used tires that he got out of a dumpster? Because that's his
I think that's kind of his style. I don't really remember. I didn't look that close, but I know I remember Chris Blaze was prepping his bikes and building his engines.
Yeah, that was after he kind of got that Blaze ride, and it really turned his attention to being. Like,
for sure.
I could be good at this.
That's kind of when I first noticed him, is when he was riding for Blaze.
Yep.
And he was ripping hole shots on a KTM 250 or 300 or something, mm-hmm. two-stroke against the factory four-strokes.
Yeah.
And I was like, geez, what? Like, I remember asking Chris, I'm like, what are you doing to that engine? Like, how can you,
you
hole shot on that? How can that kid hole shot on that bike?
You know?
And there were times where, you know, he would pass Kurt and he'd pass all of us on a two stroke, just pinned across the desert, and then he'd ping off a rock and crash and, you know, whatever. But it was always cool to watch. And I never forgot that, because I don't know the last time I remember, you know, a 250 or 300 two stroke hole shotting over the big four stroke. So
yeah,
that was for sure some of my, you know, fondest memories of young Skyler.
Yeah. And now we know him as the guy that calls our podcast at wee hours in the morning in Saudi Arabia, or America in the evening in Saudi Arabia, and chats with us about rally racing for a long time.
Same guy who sold everything he owned to make it to Dakar, you know, and put it all on the line. So it's really rewarding for him, I think, to get a factory ride and feel like it's paying off.
We cover it all coming up. Enjoy the interview, Quinn. This will be the first time you've heard it.
Can't wait to hear it.
I think everybody else is going to dig it. Skyler's a stand-up guy, and I think he's going to be somebody everybody's going to root for this year. So enjoy. Okay, really fast, quick word about Climb and their support of the 2022 Dakar Rally Daily Show. Quinn, Cody, and I have both used and abused our fair share of Climb gear in the past. And having the Idaho-based apparel brand on board for this year's show is a great fit, because we use their gear, obviously, but also because they have some serious Dakar Rally street cred. Privateers have turned to Climb to take them to the Dakar finish line for years. One pair of pants for 2 weeks of racing? Yep, that's possible. It's gross, but it's possible. And they have a long track record of supporting racers that show us the Dakar dream is possible. It's just one of those brands that always seems to be out there outperforming in the nastiest environments. That's why I think we have such confidence in Climb gear whenever we wear it, and why we're so happy they're on board to support Dakar Rally Daily. What's up, everybody? This is our preview show, our first preview show of the 2022 Dakar Rally, and I am at the Kirk Caselli Foundation. Oh man, ride day out here at Fox Raceway today, and I have a super special guest. Skylar's here with me. Factory. Hello. Husqvarna rally racer, Skyler. Hooser?
Pretty much.
How do you say it?
Any country you go to, it's always different.
Yeah, it's house.
House.
It's easy, people. Just say house.
Yeah, it's like house, but with a Z at the end of it.
Yeah, that's it. House it up.
Yeah.
So we had a great day today, I think. I can speak for you in saying, hey, Kirk Caselli Foundation is a pretty awesome group. And, you know, I saw you riding the rally bike around on the motocross track. What's that all about?
Yeah, you know, I've spent like months on the rally bike now, and I spent a couple laps on the regular, you know, motocross bike, and it's a little feels like a mini bike,
I bet.
So hop back on the rally bike and just spend my time on there. But
yeah,
I was joking around with him because we had this ISDE special test out there, and I don't think I've turned this much in like a couple years.
Right, there were a lot of corners out there crammed in between the stakes and the ribbons and that kind of stuff. But you know, you had a pretty good relationship with Kurt coming up as a desert racer. You really looked up to him. Talk about how Kurt impacted your life and, you know, how you guys met or any stories you have about Kurt Caselli.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of started off, I was racing the National Hare and Hounds. And so, obviously Kurt was dominating that kind of stuff. And
yeah, he's, you know, the man.
He's so good. And then it was really cool too, because growing up, you know, Destry Abbott and Dave Pearson and Dave Camo and all these guys, I was looking up to everyone. And then, you know, as I started getting older and getting a little bit closer to everyone, I got an opportunity to ride for Chris Blaze. And he's with the KTM team. So then we started pitting next to KTM.
Another rally badass, right?
Exactly.
Chris Blaze, third overall.
Yeah. So I kind of just ended up in this spot between, you know, Chris, who's a legend, and he had all these stories, and then Kurt, who would, I don't know, like, not necessarily take me under his wing, but just he could tell that his advice would go places if he gave it to me.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, anytime when I started riding, I was kind of out of control. You know, I was really thinking that if I went out there and really proved to him or whatever, it would make a difference, and had some crashes and had some battles with Kurt, which is something that's still a highlight of my life. So, you know, I had a handful of battles with him out in the desert, which was really crazy. And
that's
then
cool. Afterwards
he'd come down and be like, all right, listen, you know, you think I don't like, or you think it doesn't bug me when some punk ass kid on a two stroke passes me. That's how he talks to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, yeah, he's like, dude, you gotta, you know, calm it down a little bit. And so he, I don't know, he taught me a lot of lessons just about my mental state and everything. And then I got to spend,
as you're competting against him,
right?
Like you're passing him in the race. I mean, he might've won the battle that day, and he passed you back because he saw, you know, you're hitting sagebrush or going all over the place and being crazy. But at the end of the day, he's like, hey, punk, come here. I gotta talk to you. Like, he saw something in you, maybe. He's like, if I tell you to chill out, A, it'll be more fun to race with you because I won't be scaring you passing me. And B, you got something. Like, you can do this.
Yeah, it was really cool to have him, you know, because I look back and there wasn't a lot of, I would say, pro riders that was like just telling me how to do things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're kind of on your own.
I was learning lessons, a lot of lessons the hard way.
And they don't want to give a lot of secrets up either, because they're like still winning.
Yeah. So to have someone like Kurt that would go kind of out of his way to just sit down and say, all right, listen, you know, if you want to do this, you need to be, you need to have a head on your shoulders.
Wow, really cool.
Yeah, and it was really cool to have that. And then, you know, I got to spend a couple weeks with him down in Baja and learn a lot more about strategy and team and just the way how everything works. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it was a really strong, I don't know, time to just build a relationship with someone, even though it was a very short time in the grand scheme of things that I got to spend with him. I feel super connected, and, you know, it built a lot of friendships that I have now. And, you know, I feel really connected to him just because of, you know, the lessons that he did teach me. I've used those throughout my entire process now, and it's been gnarly. I've had to learn some lessons, hard lessons, but, you know, that stuff that he was talking to me about has really helped me through. And now I'm doing my first podcast as a factory racer.
You're still using those Kurt Caselli words of wisdom, it sounds like, out there, and it paid off. So, I mean, the last time we talked, you were finishing a great race and you had a great success, but it wasn't long ago. You were selling everything you owned to go racing and you were trying your hardest to show everybody what you can do. It worked out. What's it been like since the end of the race last year? And how fast has your life changed, and what has changed?
Well, I mean, that's a very loaded question because there's so many parts to it.
All my questions are heavily loaded. Let's just start with one. What was it like when you got the call to be a factory rider?
Well, so the hard thing was, is like after I finished ninth overall the first time, I just thought, okay, for sure, we're going to get a phone call. They'll be a factory racer because any American that's done this, they're on a factory team are going to get it. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever came.
Yeah.
So then I finished fifth, nothing came. And I'm like, man, this can't happen. So I sent an email to Jordy Villadomes.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, listen, Jordy, like, I appreciate, you know, when I took the lead on day three or four, whatever it was, they came over, they started like helping me out a little bit more with strategy, being a little bit more connected with me and things. And I got to know them a lot more.
Yeah.
So I sent them an email afterwards and I said, "Hey, Jordy, appreciate all the help. You know, I had a great result. And, you know, I'm confident that the mistakes that I made this year with proper training and some other things, we can, you know, continue to build on this. However, I can't do this again. I have nothing left to sell. Yeah. I'm on my own here."
I sold it all.
Yeah. And the amount of stress, like, listen, there's so many people that came together that made it possible for me to do that.
Yeah.
But the amount of stress to put together fundraisers and just all this kind of different stuff was insane. And I didn't ride for a month straight.
I remember our conversation. You said, "I haven't been doing any training." Yeah. I'm coming into this banking on the skills I have and the experience I have, but right. I got nothing left when I come home.
Yeah.
I spend it all. This is it. I'm all in.
Yeah. And so I told him that and I just said, "Hey, listen, you know, I appreciate everything, but if I want to continue this and if you feel that I could add some benefit to the team, I'm going to need some support."
Yeah.
And, you know, let me know what I can do, if we can do anything there. And he sent me an email back that said, "Hey, we had a meeting in a couple of weeks and I'll keep you posted." And then I didn't, it was silence again.
What a long couple of weeks.
Phew. And I was just sitting there and then I wake up because the time difference. So I wake up in the morning, one morning, and I have a text message from him that said, "Hey, you know, let me know if you're free for a phone call." And I was just like,
"I'm free now. Yeah. You want to talk now?"
Yeah. So I said, "Hey, I'd call anytime." And he gave me a call and he said, "Hey, you know, this isn't normal. Normally we have like kind of a building process of, you know, you got to work your way into the team, but we have some changes going on and we'd like to offer you a spot on, you know, in the team." And it was just, you know, one of those is really, it's weird. It's weird because I've said it a lot, but this is something I've worked for my whole life, kind of just being a factory racer in general.
Yeah.
But to even race the Dakar and race rallies has been like a huge goal of mine. And then to be a factory racer at these rallies was like, it's weird when something doesn't seem attainable.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, this is something that you watch on TV. This is something that just happens to people, but it's not something that I like. It's such a huge thing.
Such a big dream, right? Yeah. You're like, my dream was to do this, obviously. Like, I loved it. I tried to do it. I wanted to do it. But when it happened to you, it was almost unbelievable.
Yeah. It was just kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I didn't know what to feel. I didn't know what to think. And I you know, my girlfriend, she's the nicest person I've ever met in my life. She's really cool, but she's not like super well-versed in motorcycle stuff. So yeah. She doesn't understand really the level of importance or meaning that this kind of has in, you know, a motorcycle's life. So I came in and I just said, I got the phone call. I'm going to be a factory racer. And she went, "Oh, that's really cool.
That's great."
Yeah. And I was just like, like,
I need more than, yeah, I need more, like, than really cool.
I don't know how to act right now. It's really,
you were in shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were shocked in a good way, but you were still like, just, I don't know what to do with my hands.
Right.
I don't know who I call first.
Yeah.
What do I do with my stuff? Like,
yeah.
What's next? What do I do?
And also the really hard thing was that they were going through so many different, you know, people were going here. And
yeah, right. Training,
So I couldn't say anything.
You were on radio silence at the same time.
I was just like, I just had to sit there and people are like, "Oh yeah, you know, we'd love to, are you going to go back?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you know."
You're like, I'm committed.
Yeah, I really, yeah. You know, I just, wow. it was super cool to get that. To get that phone call and to just, I mean, I don't know.
When did you get, do you remember when you got the call? Like what?
It was into February for sure.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was well after the.
Yeah, it was like a month after the race.
Yeah.
You're like, I did it. I need to make a plan now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's the other thing, you know, we talk about a lot about, I had to sell everything and sure. I came home to nothing, but I wasn't a total idiot with it. So I did.
That's good to know.
Yeah, I set myself up some contingency plans. So if I did poorly at the race, it would have been game over.
Right.
But luckily, I was able to do well.
Mm-hmm.
So I came home. I got some bonuses, you know, from my sponsors and everything. Yep. So I wasn't going to be just completely left with nothing.
Yeah, right.
So I sold my truck and I sold all my bike. So basically, I had a game plan that if I were to come back, you know, I'd be able to buy a couple bikes, continue to ride.
Yeah, and then, stay in it.
Yeah, and then maybe, you know, buy a Ford Ranger or something like that for a couple grand and, you know, go to races. So, you know, I had myself set up there, and then I got this phone call, and I was like, all right, well, you know, I don't have to buy bikes now, so this is super nice. And then, like, all right, well, I'm going to need a vehicle. I've never had an adult vehicle. It's always been like some
hand-me-down, yeah, like a
1987 Toyota pickup truck or something.
Broken truck. Yeah. So, it's working.
Yeah. So finally I was like, all right, now's the time. I think now's the time. I think I'm going to get like an actual truck.
So you did that factory racer thing. You're like, I got my contract. I'm buying a truck.
You're buying a truck. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. But it's also weird too. So I have a very guilty conscience.
When you buy something?
Well, you have
buyer's remorse?
Yeah, not buyer's remorse. It's more of like, you know, there's been so many people that have helped me for racing that when I spend money on anything else, I'm like guilty about it.
You feel like you're spending their money.
Exactly.
So no, because like, people were helping you so much.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, listen, but you know, if something nice happened, I'm going to do something nice for, you know, like, all right, I'm buying a truck.
Right.
So I got fired up on that. And then, you know, I got my bikes. I flew directly to Dubai and tested and got a setting on my bike.
This is still in the spring, like spring of last year?
Yeah, like
March. Or this year, sorry.
Like right away, they're like, okay, we got your contract here. In a week, we're doing a testing in Dubai. You want to go? I'm like, yep.
Wow,
sign me up. I'm going. So, I'm pretty much got thrown right into the thick of it. I mean, it was like the whole testing thing was super crazy. I mean, they test for so long. It's 7 a.m. to dark. And you come home at the dark and it's okay, you want to change some clickers, all right, we're going to change your setting. And I'm like, all right, cool, you know, suspension's coming off, we're going to make a setting change, I'm going to take a break here. And they're like, all right, setting's back on, go back out. And I'm like, oh,
no rest.
Like 15 minute break, back out, 30 minute moto all day for at least like 8-12 hours.
So the investment, like, you're already seeing the difference in, you know, Skylar own program doing some road books outside St. George, Utah, mm-hmm, to, wow, these guys are taking it to like in a level you didn't even really know. You didn't know they were going to be working that hard already in March after the race.
Exactly. And the super crazy thing is, it's like, this isn't a job to these guys. This is their life. Yeah, like the mechanics,
really serious about it. They really hate losing.
No, it's serious. These guys that are like, you know, the mechanics and everything, that they, if they need to work a 90 hour work week, that's what they're doing.
Wow.
If it means wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and then go to bed at 11, that's what they're doing. It's just, there's no other option. Wow. And to see like the amount of effort that I've put into it, and then now to have my mechanic, Louis, is an absolute machine.
Right.
The dude is, he'll wake up, you know, send me off and then go run for like 30 kilometers. and then he'll completely, and he's so thorough. He's such, and just to see the amount of effort and how serious this whole team is, you know, is just like, wow, this is what it's supposed to feel like.
Were you feeling like, I'm glad I put that work in on my own, so when I got here I was ready, because these guys are serious.
Right. Yeah. And it just makes me feel like they're not, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. Like they're
more than dedicated.
More than dedicated. And it's not something that they're like,
they're not checking a paycheck and they're not looking at the hours on their watch being like, oh, I gotta check out for lunch.
Right. And they're not annoyed, like if I came back and I need to make a change, like,
good, that's my job. Yep. I want you to make changes.
Yep. Yeah. That's what we need to do, you know. And it's been really cool, and to have kind of a positive atmosphere too, like the team works really well together.
Yeah.
And everyone's super nice. So to go straight into something like that, I was like, wow, this is, and it wasn't a feeling of like, you know, oh man, like starstruck when I got there. It was a feeling of like, this, I feel, they make me feel at home. Like, this is what, I feel comfortable here.
Yeah, they're working for your success.
Right, like this feels right.
But everybody's like focused, laser focused on winning.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's been pretty
intense.
That's
cool.
So,
very cool. So tell me about bike differences that you can talk about. Like you went from, you know, privately sourced bike, you know, something here in the US, and then you got a rental bike that was set up pretty well like the last couple of years, and now you're on full fact, like it doesn't get any better.
Right.
Like, how's that transition going, to try to explain like what the difference is to that next level?
the machine that I was on in Dakar this last year, the KTM.
Yeah, the Bass Trucks team, right?
Yep. So they did a really good job.
Yeah, that program looked really solid.
It's awesome. And yeah, Bart runs a tight ship there too. So they had me on a good bike. I had suspension that was set up for me, and it was just, I was on a good bike.
Yeah, one level up from the year before where you're on a bike with suspension that's stock or who knows what settings in it, and you move some clickers, that's about all you're going to get.
I actually got that bike with the plastic still on the cases.
Yeah, they're like, peel it off, ride your rally bike. So there it is. So you went one level with Bass, which was great.
Yeah.
And now you're in another world.
But what was weird is I would put in the same amount of effort. So it wasn't like I got onto this factory team and thought, because I learned this lesson with Kurt. I went out there and I was battling with Kurt, and I was on this team, and I was like, I got to prove to these people that I can ride fast. But I learned that lesson thanks to Kurt. And so now when I got on this factory bike, it's like, I'm here for a reason. I don't have to prove that I need to be here. I've already done it.
Yeah.
So I need to just do what I've been doing. So I went straight into Kazakhstan and won a stage, my first World Rally stage. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, but I belong here.
But I didn't feel like I was pushing it. I just felt like I was riding normal.
Not making mistakes.
Yeah.
Not doing the Skyler on the two-stroke pass and Kurt in the desert moves. Yeah. You're doing the other Skyler.
Yeah. So it was a super cool feeling to just be on the next step of machine and just ride the same, but have that much more speed and you know, the result comes with it. And it was super cool to be like, wow, you know, I did well and I was competing with these guys. But there were some days that I just like, they were really far away.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I'm like, I'm in the contention to win a world round here.
Yeah.
Like, this is pretty awesome. This is really cool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously I had a moose failure on the, it happens.
Stuff still happens. Yeah. You know, especially in that sport. We always say it.
And it just, it doesn't matter how much preparation you put in. It just, things are going to happen and you got to be okay with it. And so I rebounded.
Mm-hmm.
I kept Louie up till like 2 o'clock in the morning because he had to prep my bike after we got it out of the desert.
Yeah.
And then I came back the next day and won another stage.
So you're where you need, where you belong.
Yeah, I just felt super good. And then we go into Silkway.
Yep.
And Silkway, right when the terrain started getting right up in my alley, we, you know, got canceled out of Mongolia and had to turn around. However, the type of terrain that didn't suit me, which was like tight woods, more motocrossy stuff, I was still in contention. So I'm like, wow, this is all right. Like, we're doing all right.
So is it like, I've ridden a couple factory like off-road race bikes, and to me, there's not like one big thing that you're like, this is so amazing, this part of this bike. It's just like the culmination of all of the attention and all of the refinements across the board. The foot pegs are always in the right spot and they're always sharp and they're always great. The levers are always consistent. They're never bent. They're never like this. It's all that little attention to detail that, and then like the major advantages of a factory motor and a factory suspension setting and a factory tech, like those make big differences, but they're all like fine tuned for the success of you specifically. Like if you jump on somebody else's bike, it's not going to feel the same.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's kind of the big difference between all 3 years that I have done this is you have the fully stock bike that I didn't even get to ride or set up anything.
Yeah.
And I still finish ninth on it. And then I go to the next level where I have a setting that's set up for me. So it's exactly like you say, like you put that little attention into detail and you just have, and then the results start coming. So when you go to that next step and then it's just, you know, that's the one thing, I don't know, I feel like I'm still early into my career, but I want to leave something behind.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I take what Kurt did for me and I also want to do to other people is that are dedicated.
Yeah.
So there's a handful of, you know, a couple of kids that I try to, you know, I learned this lesson the hard way. You don't have to.
Yeah.
If
skip these steps.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you how to go around that obstacle.
Yeah. So I'm trying to give back, I guess, into the sport a little bit, but that's one of those lessons is to, look, I know you got a job. I've been there. I know you got to prep your own bike. I've been there, but if you put that much more effort into, you know, you got fresh grips, everything's tight.
That's the stuff that makes a difference.
That's what makes the difference. Everything's fresh. You know your bike's going to be working. You're not like hurry and prepping it on Friday night.
Yeah.
If you get done with the race on Sunday, you're prepping the bike on Monday.
That motor you wish you had. It's not the suspension you wish you had. It's all the little stuff. Mm-hmm. Your suspension should work.
Right.
Yeah. It should be clean. It should work well.
Yeah.
But Don't have a leaky fork seal and start the race. Don't have a bald tire and start the race if you can help it. Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's
like, come that's on, the thing. Give yourself the tools to succeed, even if they're small, even if they're grips.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's if you're willing to put in the work, it's possible. I mean, yeah. Before I got sponsored by Chris, I had to dive through the dumpster to get my tires.
I remember those days.
I'm not even joking. I actually went into the dumpster to get my tires to race National Hare and Hounds, and I won a Hare and Hound Championship with that, with duct tape numbers and stuff. Like, it's possible. And so that's kind of, So, I mean, and that's the other thing too, is when I was racing directly against Kurt, and when he signed his contract to race rallies and there was going to be a spot open on USA Off-Road KTM.
Yeah.
He had like me and Ivan Ramirez, and then they flew over Toby Price, who were kind of more or less, it wasn't spoken, but it was like, all right, you guys are kind of shooting for...
They're almost unspoken tryouts.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I was kind of in line.
Yeah, you were there.
And that's where I learned that hardest lesson of, okay, I went way out and I was so out of control and I crashed and I broke my back.
Yeah.
Right behind Toby, who broke his neck.
Yeah.
You know, and so it just like...
You were trying to prove yourself again. You were saying, I want to show him I belong there. Instead of believing that you already belong there, you just have to ride super like intelligent, like a guy like Kirk Caselli learned. Mm-hmm. Like, that's hard. That's hard to grasp for me. I'd be like, you got to go faster to win. And they're like, nah, you got to finish to win.
But... It really set me back as far as, I mean, the amount of struggle that I went through. However, I look back at that, and if I got that right then and I fast-tracked myself onto where I am at right now, there's so many hard lessons that I had to learn that have turned me more into kind of the racer that I am now that I probably would have never learned.
Wow, good advice.
And it's hard to, I don't know, it's weird to grasp that, to be like, man, all that struggle was... I mean, worth it.
A lot of people that listen to this and that we talk to all the day, because we're dirt bike people, we've been on that couch for a few weeks, and you're like, man, I really wish I was healed right now so I could go. I missed an opportunity. I'm in the hole, but there's lessons there you can take. Yeah. You can start in a different spot and really, really get to a spot that's amazing where you are right now. Your factory rally racer. Yeah.
Well, and without those lessons and all that kind of stuff, I mean, there's so many different things now that, like I said, the lessons that I've learned then, now when if I make a mistake out in the desert, I'm like, okay, keep a level head. It is what it is.
It's gonna happen.
Yep, it's gonna happen. We're gonna continue. And
like, nothing does that more than the Dakar rally. It's so intense. Like, I mean, every day Quinn and I are talking, like, what, I don't know what they're gonna, like, zip tie and tires together, but that's just the stuff you see. There's stuff going on behind the scenes, and also the rules. I want to talk about rules with you right now, because you have a fast track to rules that are coming, proposed rules, because there's not a lot of stuff finalized right now. We're sitting in, you know, it's before Christmas, it's just the beginning of December right now as we're doing this. I don't know what's going on with the tire rule. I don't know what's going on with the speed limit rule. I don't know what's going on with all those other sort of mystery things that are out there that, I mean, you guys got to prepare for that. How are you preparing to go into the race this year with unknowns, or do you know what's going to happen?
Well, I think most off for me is I'm just going to do what I've done in the past, right?
Good. Yep. Okay.
Just go into it and do every day the best I can.
Yeah.
And that is what it is. If I change that, then, you know, I'm setting myself up for the inevitable that Dakar is.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen, and I got to be able to just handle it. And it is what it is, you know? And that's, I think off on another tangent, I think that's going to be probably the hardest thing for me, because now as a factory racer, the other good thing with the team is they know that we know what we need to do.
Yeah.
Right. They know that we need to win, or that we know we need to win.
Yep.
Right. So they don't put extra pressure on us. Like, you need to win today. Cause they, like, that's your dangerous job. It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, it's so they are like super, just whatever you need to succeed, let's give you that.
They're to solve problems. That's why they're there, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's super nice. So I have it on my own shoulders. Whatever pressure is on me is on my own shoulders.
Yeah.
However, they're being a factory racer now is in that zone of like, okay, I went there and had a good result as a privateer. You know, it's not spoken, but there is pressure to do better now that I'm on factory rider.
Everybody that's a Skyler house fan is going to be like, well, now what's he going to do?
Right.
Like, I mean, I'm going to think
there's expectations.
So there's a lot of people out there, and you're one of those people that would be like, well, now what can I do?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's there.
Yeah, it's definitely there. And I mean, obviously I want to win.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going for. But it's hard to keep that, like, you know, easygoing mentality.
And you can't win it in a day.
No,
it's seven, it's so 13 stages, yeah. one marathon stage this year, one Dude. Rest stage, two marathon stages this yeah. year, one rest stage. Like every day is keeping a level head.
Yeah. It's.
So you're not really thinking about rules right now. You're going to let the rule people work that out. Like, you have opinions about them, I'm sure, if they limit your tires to 6 or whatever it is again. And
now it's 12.
It's 12 next year. So at least you have one almost every day.
Right. So you get it. Well, you have two marathon stages. We got to make those tires last for 2 days.
Yeah, that's normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, normal. But okay. Now we get at least one tire every day. So it's
safe.
Yeah,
it's safe.
Yeah, exactly. So that's good. Yep. The speed limit rule, I am very opinionated on, and that's for 2023. That won't happen this year.
Okay, got it. That's just what their future is. Their yes. future idea.
And I'm very against it. Like, I will go to war against this rule. I think it's more dangerous in all circumstances, period.
Really?
Because they want to limit us at 150 kilometers an hour, which is really fast.
Yeah.
And if that's what, 93 miles an hour, more or less, something like that, somewhere around there. Have you ever crashed going that fast?
No, I don't go that fast.
Anything faster than walking speed is going to be is dangerous.
Yeah. So where do you set the limit to danger?
Apparently the danger is almost at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's really fast still. And anything crashing over that speed is going to be the same result, no matter if you're going 180 kilometers an hour or 150.
Or 80 kilometers an hour.
Or 80.
So what's the point of putting a limit on if it doesn't make any sense?
Why? And so that's the whole point of every single circumstance that will come after that is going to be more dangerous. So the only way they're going to be able to limit us is if they limit the engine. Right? So then we're pinned all the time. So if they only give us a fifth gear or something.
Because you're racing a clock.
Right.
And the clock doesn't stop. So you're going to put the throttle down as fast as you can go for the given situation. Mm-hmm. If your bike stops at 90 miles an hour on a flat road, you're going to be stressed out and trying to ride faster through terrain that you shouldn't be going 90 miles an hour.
Exactly. And you're stressing the engine.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is dangerous. The engine can fail in a spot that's super dangerous. Or they put a governor on the bike, which is even worse.
And that can fail. That can do stuff.
But also you could come into something where you're pushing that limit. It governs you out at right at 148 kilometers an hour.
But you needed the extra horsepower to get out of a bad situation.
Yeah, go to jump a ditch or to lift a front wheel, and then it boom, 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 and you can't get over something, and then you have a big crash.
Yeah,
bad. I get it. So both those, and then...
It's not that you're against them. It's not that you're against where the limit is set. You're not like, no, it should be higher. You're just like, if you stop this motorcycle from producing power out of my control, I'm not going to be able to control the motorcycle.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying I'm going to go 200 kilometers an hour anywhere, but I'm saying if I need 200 kilometers of an hour of power to get me from 100 to 120 kilometers an hour to dodge a camel or dodge a rock, like...
Exactly.
That puts me in a dangerous situation.
Yes.
So a speed limit is sort of like, sounds good on paper to you. Like, hey, if we go slower, we'll be safer. But that's really not the reality.
It's really not the reality. And I get it. I get what they're trying to, I get it.
Yeah, they're trying to save people's lives in a race that's inherently dangerous.
I get it. And I applaud them on that effort. However, this is not the way to do it.
Yeah.
The way to do it is more technical navigation.
Yes, naturally slow down the race by making people turn more.
Yes.
And possibly, you know, look around and slow down.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. If they want to make us go slower, make us do more turns.
Which hasn't been the case in Saudi Arabia. It's been confusing. Last year it was confusing because of the, correct me if I'm wrong, the navigation direction on the compass heading was so close to different routes through the riverbeds that you're like, these are the same degree, but one would eventually just bail you out in the boonie somewhere, but you're still going 100K while you're doing that.
That, and they would tell us to be like, you're supposed to be turning onto a road that you can't really see, and then there's no compass heading. So you're just like,
follow the road that is supposed to be there.
Follow the drawing, but they're drawing this like from helicopter view. So when you're actually there, you're like, it says I'm supposed to be taking left, but it's not. Yeah.
But you're saying, I want more slower, tighter, definite turns, just slow us down. as much as you can with turning, and then we're going to go fast as we can.
The other thing they're doing this year that I don't really agree is everyone complained about the rocks because no one likes rocks. So they're running us mostly sand dunes this year.
I saw that on the route thing. It's a lot of sand.
Which is not, dune navigation is not difficult. You follow the compass heading through the dunes. That's what it is. Yeah, okay, you might get off on your compass heading a little bit, but there's not confusing things to happen.
There's no bush here and turn here that could be the trail.
Or washes going the same direction.
That's the tricky one.
Yeah, that's tricky navigation, and usually that happens in riverbeds that there's rocks, and everyone complains about it. And okay, don't get me wrong. Yes, trying to look down at your roadbook going through a rock section is dangerous. But dune, just a full race of dunes is like going to be a motocross race,
which is potentially dangerous if people are sending it off the edges of, you know, scalloped dunes.
Exactly. However, all the European dudes really like the dunes.
Yeah.
So they all complained about the rocks, and now we're all riding dunes, and I'm like, come on. Where it gets exciting is when it gets rocky. And people don't like the rocks, so they, So anyways.
Skylar wants more rocks.
I like rocks.
Put some rocks in those routes, guys. Yeah.
But yeah, so as far as the rules ahead, I feel like the airbag is definitely a really good thing.
Yeah, I think airbag tech is to the point. I mean, MotoGP has proved this, and you know, you guys have had them activate when you crash, I'm sure, or you know people that have, and you know, what's the experience like? I know personally, I know a lot about them just through the technology companies I work with and talk to. They're brilliant, and the amount of transmissible force that an airbag can dissipate is astonishing.
No, it's
It can stop force where padding and shells and stuff like that, they still transmit force, but air will evaporate it almost.
Sam had a big crash in Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
And his airbag read that he hit at like 22 Gs.
Oh my gosh. That's 22 times the strength of gravity on Earth, basically.
No, it was banana, and he had an injury. And, you know, he had to go home and stuff, wasn't able to continue. But it wasn't that. He had like two impacts at that.
I'm going to have a physics major call me and be like, you're wrong. It's not 22 times. It's 28 times if you multiply by this. But anyway, 22 Gs is insane.
But
that's how fast he hit the ground and stopped.
Yes.
And then bounced and hit the ground again.
Yeah. And so that specific right there.
That gives me goosebumps.
Yeah. To show like, okay, you know, that might be personal information that I maybe not share.
However, he hit the ground hard.
He hit the ground really hard, and he's racing still.
Right.
Which is important. And so to have the airbag like that, okay, it might be kind of annoying. It's heavy. It's hot. But it's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
To have tires is a good thing. You know? And speed limit, not a good thing.
Got it.
Make more difficult.
Cool. So, well,
that's my stance.
Yeah, understood. understood. What about prep? How are you prepping this year? I know you're riding a lot. I know you got new rally bikes under the Husqvarna team. Mm-hmm. I've been telling Quinn to tell me all about them because he was helping development. He won't say anything about them to me.
Yeah.
But I said, I'll just ask Skylar. He'll tell me everything. So how's the new bike? What's it like? What's all new and different about it? And just tell me all the details about it.
This is also the hardest thing for me because I want to be real with everyone.
That's why I'm only interviewing you without Quinn here, because he'll get in trouble.
All right. No, I'll get in trouble too.
Yeah.
No, the new bike, that's actually been such a cool experience with the team, is to see what changes things.
You
know,
oh, okay.
When you change, you know, the flex of this or that, or the frames, offset of triple clamps, and just, you know, all that kind of stuff has been super, super cool, but also incredibly exhausting.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been testing a lot, and we have this new bike, which is awesome. And I can't say anything more than we've been testing suspension and engine stuff.
Yep.
However, it's super, super cool. And it's been a long process, and it hasn't gone perfect.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of ups and downs. And
is that because it's developing?
Yeah.
It's still in development. It's not like they had a year testing before last year.
They lost a year, too, with COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
So we've been basically, like, really trying to, and not to say that other people aren't developing, but, I mean, you know, the KTM group in general are the only company that's giving a production bike. So we're also developing what's going to be sold to the general public.
Got it.
So it's a huge process, and the team effort that it takes to do that is insane, because we're not just working for only us. or we also have to sell motorcycles.
So if you could define one thing that's the biggest difference or the biggest benefit that you like about the new bike, is it the way it feels? Is it power delivery? Like how much different is it? Or is it, again, small things that are making a bigger difference? Or is it a big difference? Does it feel a lot different?
It's a completely different bike.
Yeah.
So my biggest thing is, obviously, in every water one, every rider wants to be good at everything, right? You want to be a good rider.
No compromises.
Right. Yeah. Well, but also you want to be, as a rider yourself, you want to be good at motocross, endurocross, desert, all that. You want to be good everywhere. My strengths are when it gets really rough and when it's really fast.
Okay.
So rocks and high speeds and all types of stuff, that's where I feel most comfortable.
Right.
And where I've always kind of been on the other side of it is in the dunes.
Yeah.
The dunes are gnarly. You got to work real hard in them, and the terrain reading, it's uncomfortable, all that kind of stuff. So I've always gone a little bit, I've been more hesitant in the dunes.
Yeah.
This bike handles super, super good. You can turn it really good. Mm-hmm. You can throw it around a lot easier. You know, if you get sideways, it's easier to bring it back. You know, it's not necessarily that big, giant, huge bike feeling where if you get sideways, you stay sideways.
I got it. Yep.
So it's been super nice there. So it's benefiting me in the areas that I've...
And not being a compromise in the other things where it's rough and fast, you're still good there, but you're feeling like, hey, I can gain some confidence in the terrain I'm not familiar with or as comfortable going fast in.
Exactly. That's so cool. It's been a huge process, you know, to get to this point, but now we're at this point and I'm like, all right, this is awesome. This feels really cool.
And even if there was something in it that bothered you, you're confident when you get, you know, Saudi Arabia, January 1, you're going to have a bike that's going to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm excited for it too. You know, obviously there's so many unknowns with the race, and just anything that can happen probably will.
And we'll probably talk during the race about a few of those things that happen to people, maybe even you.
Yeah.
I hope not. I hope you just have a boring race and you're like, this is so boring.
Yeah, this is
super
awesome.
Easy. Yeah. Rally's easy.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm prepared for that.
Yeah.
And obviously I want the result that everyone else wants. You know, I want to be on the top of the box, and I'm going to do everything that I can to do that. However, I'm also prepared for the fact that there might be some things that don't go my way.
Yep.
And I'm just going to do the best that I can to correct those problems and just keep moving forward every day. My biggest thing that I think helped me in the last two Dakars is just having fun. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people lose that sight once they get to a certain point with dirt bikes, and they start looking more on the pressure and how focused you need to, grind every day, accept nothing less but to win.
Yeah.
That kind of mentality is like, look, we get one of these lives, you know, and I want to enjoy this process as much as possible, you know, and of course I want to win. That's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I have competition. However, that's not what this is all about.
Yeah.
It's also about having fun with your friends, experiencing new places, people, just all that kind of stuff. And that's, you know, I'm just going to take it all in. I'm going to try to sell as many Husqvarna motorcycles as possible. I'm going to try to win as many races as I possibly can. That's what I was hired to do.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to enjoy my time and you know, try to have fun with people and treat everyone nicely. That's the other thing too, though. It's like these people are working so hard and they're so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's a handful of people that are rude for no reason, and it just doesn't make sense. They're here. They're there for us.
Got it.
And so, you know, to interact. And, oh man. Actually, I'm super excited to be able to tell this on this, but it's been so crazy because it's been a very secretive year.
Yeah.
A lot of things that I can't post, and I haven't been able to post anything on social media at all.
Like, just don't do it.
They're like, you can't do it. You can't post it. And
then
you have the whole factory KTM team that are like, yeah, we're posting because they can. And I'm just like, yo. So I've been super quiet, and I felt bad because everyone's like, oh yeah, first factory year. And I'm like,
crickets.
Yeah, I can't do anything. And I'm like, I'm super sorry, but you know, hopefully going
this will give
now,
somebody a taste of what's to come.
Skyler's
breaking out moment. It sounds like, as you talk about your year, and thanks for taking the time today at the Kirk Kaselli Ride Day to talk to me, it sounds like Kurt's in your head still. Like,
he's of course
he's there telling you, have fun, man.
Yeah,
like, this is your, you've earned to be here, you're supposed to be here. Win. Yeah, of course we're trying to be badasses here, but like, we're here to win.
Yeah.
But we're here to have fun too.
Well, and that, I think that's what's super important with just life in general, is just to, you know, enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah.
And enjoy. Yeah. Someone said something, I don't remember where I heard it, but you can have You can have goals in your life and dreams, but don't focus so much on what that dream is that when you do accomplish it, that it's just like, oh, okay. Right. You know, you have, there's so many little things that happen in between that are, is what's important. And so many people too, that you can have, you know, have experiences with or help along the way or whatever. And I think that's what's important about all this. And I, you know, I said that before, but I don't want to be the only one. You know, I don't want to be the one that, Chris is a legend, but I don't want it to go, you know, from 2007. That was the last time an American was on the podium. I don't want that to happen. I want, you know, there to be some type of hype behind this, you know, people to get excited about rally things to, you know, and just motorcycles in general. Just go out with your friends and ride motorcycle. Super fun.
Yeah. Do it, man. Yeah. We're here for you. Thanks again for chatting with us. Look forward to maybe pinging you during the race and having some live commentary from the sand dunes, it sounds like. And see how it's going, man. Everybody, Skyler with the big H-O-W-E-S. It's house with a Z. It's like a house with a Z. It's easy. Let's get it straight. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Say goodbye, Skyler.
All right. See you later.
Nice job, dude.